On this computer. Here we go. Hi, everybody. Happy Zen Talk number 12. Hi. So before we get started, I just wanted to share something that came into my head this morning, and I kind of talk about it on tomorrow's show because we just taped tomorrow's show like 5 minutes ago. Like we literally ran up the stairs from that and came here. And one thing I was doing my meditation and I was thinking about the hurricane. I was thinking about Harvey and how many people are dealing with that right now. It's been a little overwhelming seeing the pictures and, you know, it's interesting. The posts, there's been a few posts that have bothered me a lot, but Brene Brown is from Houston and she posted something yesterday about her home and her, like she posted a picture of, you know, this is outside my door. And you can see the stop sign and the water is all the way up to the top of the stop sign or close to it. And that's 8 feet high. And that's outside of her door. And there was something about, there's always something about putting a face or someone, you know, with an experience like that, that kind of drives it home a little more. The thing that I was thinking about today is how overwhelmed people are in Texas and just in the country and how that sometimes when we feel overwhelmed, we feel like hope is nowhere to be found. And the truth is it's always available and it's always there. And there's always people that, why are you doing that?
May not.
I thought you had something to say.
I have nothing to say.
Oh, okay. So it's that there's peace. So what I wrote down, I have all these little post-its that I put up in my meditation area when something is really strong. And it's that peace is here. And hope is always available. And that sounds really simplistic. We don't just end there and say, oh, okay, everything's good. But peace is, it's not about finding peace out there. It's you have to find it in yourself first. And hope is always available, meaning there's always something we can do. There's always something we can, if it be to call somebody or if it be to donate money or if it be to maybe for a little bit stop watching the news so we can get our energy back. If it be that we, you know, cry to somebody about it or, support someone close to us in the name of the people who are struggling in Texas, you know, so peace is here. Hope is always available. Never doubt it. Don't look outside yourself for those things. That comes within you. And the more that you are experiencing that in yourself, the more you're going to see it in other people. So that's just a overall. Okay.
Thanks, sweetie. I got the first question, and it's from Rachel Lee. And she says, I could use some help as a therapist working with couples. This is my first time working with couples, looking for ideas for couples to connect in a meaningful way throughout the week, despite limited time, work schedules, children, household duties. Last week, I gave a couple a homework assignment of purposely checking in each day and sharing one high of the day, one low, and one thing they're grateful for. They enjoyed it and had some success. Any other ideas to build on this would be super appreciated. Okay, that's actually a very common question.
Yeah, you were excited about that one, so go ahead.
So we've actually struggled with this. There's times when we don't feel connected, right?
Right, but I think she's talking about more working. Right? You can share that too. Yeah.
So when I talk to men's groups, one thing I like to share, this is for the guys. So I guess I'm going to give you the guy's perspective. There's a technique that I don't use as often as I should, and I don't know where I heard it. Maybe it's from John Gray. 5 for 5. It means at the end of the day, let's just assume it's the mom's at home and the dad's out working, just for this example. When the dad gets home, say dad or husband. When you're done with the day, spend 5 minutes, which doesn't seem like a long time, of completely engaged presence with your wife or your partner for 5 minutes within 5 feet of them. And maybe even like a hand on the shoulder or a hand on the knee, because that's something is helpful.
Why is it called 5, 4, 5?
5 feet, 5 minutes.
Five
feet of physical proximity. Like okay. There's something magical that happens about being in each other's area.
Okay.
Not on top of each other, but just close by. Because
right.
If you're in one corner of the room and I'm on the corner, other corner of the room, that's still good, but it might be better if you're a little bit closer.
Oh, for sure. Because it's so easy then to look at your phone or to be disconnected or space out.
So that's the one thing. And then the other thing I want to say, have an executive meeting once a week. And if for whatever reason, let's say there's a couple that are kind of at each other's throats during the week of annoyances or responsibilities that aren't being met or whatever, have the couple actually write down what their grievances are. And unless it's an emergency, like the house is on fire, you don't even go there during when they're coming up, and instead have a set time outside the house, and whether it be a date or going to Chipotle or whatever it is, and then that's where you work on everything. But it's got to be fun. If it's just like an airing of grievances, that's no good. So maybe have a glass of wine while you're doing it, or have ice cream afterwards. Like, you want to make it a fun thing. And those are two things that I like to talk to my guy clients about, is do 5 for 5 and have an executive meeting once a week. And it's not really that good of an idea to have it at the end of the day after you go to sleep, before you go to sleep, because everybody's exhausted. So that's not really that good. So have it when you're a little bit more energetic.
Now, I love those two, but you and I don't do those. So those aren't obviously things you do.
I do 5 for 5 sometimes.
You do?
Yes. You don't know I'm doing it. Oh. So that's how clever I am. This is me being clever. 5 minutes, 5 feet away.
Oh, I didn't know you were doing a thing.
Well, that's the thing. Guys, you don't have to tell your wife what you're doing.
I'm going to do 5 for 5.
Yes. Here I am. I'm going to check this off my list. I'm doing 5 for 5.
Okay.
And then the last thing I'll say is love languages. Figure out how to figure out each other's love. Actually, I'll send you a test that I gave to my men's group real quickly. We took a test, we figured out our own, and then they took a test as if they were their partner, and they figured out their partners, and then we had them do a 21-day trial. Every day, speak in the language that their partner speaks in, but don't tell them you're doing a 21-day trial. Just do it and see if there's a shift in the relationship.
Yeah, love languages is huge, because if you can learn how your partner experiences, feels love, then you know how to access them. Because if you are trying to do what you like for your partner, then they may not even be able to hear that. They may not even be able to know that that's even a form of love. I, in a weird way, get excited when there's something I don't want to do that I know Todd will do. Because I know he's an acts of service guy. And so all I have to say is, Todd, will you drop these off for me? Like, we had bags of clothes that need to go to Salvation Army. Or will you go hang up these posters about the conference? That's something he likes
to
do.
Very easy.
And it makes him feel good, and it makes me feel loved. And it's like a win-win-win for us.
And it's not as easy when you say, Todd, tell me how you're feeling.
And if I say, Todd, sit down and tell me all your deepest emotions, or let's talk about this movie.
I could do it, but it's just not that easy for me.
And so what I'd be doing then is just using my love language and saying to him, you're not loving me enough because you're not doing it the way I would do it. And that's not fair.
So you got to speak in the love language of your partner. And I'm going to give one quick shout out. This is a book I read. It's called Relationship Breakthrough. It's by Chloe Madonna. She has a close partnership with Tony Robbins, and she is amazing, and it's a wonderful book.
Yeah.
So
one more thing, but I won't go long on it. When I work with women around their couplehood or around their marriage, I talk a lot about two things. Number one, start speaking up for yourself in a respectful, thoughtful way. What that means is stop thinking that your partner knows what you're thinking, and start taking ownership of your feelings and speaking about them in a way that he or she can hear them. So instead of the passive aggressive, they should know, if they loved me, they would know. No, that's not true. That's a myth. They don't know how to read your brain. And it is your responsibility to share what you're struggling with or what bothers you. And you may be embarrassed by what bothers you. I'm embarrassed by what bothers me a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But I still am like, I can even say before I say it, this feels embarrassing that this bothers me, but it does. And can we have a conversation about it? Now, a lot of times that may not be the thing you start on in couples therapy. That may be a little bit further down the line. But I'm telling you, if from the woman, female perspective, and this can be the man oftentimes too, is the one who's speaking up. But if you think that you can just numb out your feelings and pretend what you're feeling doesn't matter and that it won't affect the relationship, that's not true. The experiences you're having internally affects the relationship especially if you don't speak them. You know what I mean? It's just a part of it. The other thing is humor. I highly recommend humor to men and women. Not everything is so serious. Sometimes the way that Todd and I talk about things that are really hard is with humor. We often speak to each other in third person. I will say, sweetie, forgot to take out the garbage today.
That would never happen. Never.
And I laugh about it rather than, Todd, you didn't take out the garbage today. And like a scolding parent kind of thing, I'll say, oh, sweetie, forgot to do what I said.
Yeah, so just lighten up, Francis.
Lighten up. So just humor. Okay.
So I put something on our Facebook page about 2 hours ago, and there's a bunch of questions on here, but I also like to give the people that are actually on the call an opportunity to ask a question too. So does anybody have anything? Because if you do, raise your hand. You can go to manage participants or something and raise your hand.
Or you can just type on the chat.
Type on the chat. So I'm going to go to the next question, but just think about that for the next question because I don't see one.
Liz has her We Are Here shirt on.
I see that. She's a rock star.
That's good.
So this is from Jennifer Rogers. I can use some advice on how to help my daughter, who's almost 10, who gets very discouraged in her current sport, which is swimming. She usually does a summer rec league and decided to try a fall program that is a little more intense. She thinks that the coach always yells at her, and she gets frustrated easily. She'll end up crying by the end of the practice and say she wants to quit, but I can see that she really enjoys parts of it. She also wants to get better, and part of that is just continuing to practice. I try to tell her that the coach is trying to help, but she has already tuned out. Any suggestions? I'm going to let you take this. I'm going to close the door because I hear the train.
Okay, so Jen, I know you're on this call, so you're probably listening. So a few things. My first question would be about swim and about the coach. She says she thinks that the coach is always yelling at her. And I guess the question would be, is he? A lot of times we'll say, oh, no, that's just what coaches do. But maybe he is. And if you're there, and you can experience it or watch it maybe one day, maybe you'll get her perspective. Now, that doesn't mean then that solves the problem. But sometimes when our kids come home and they say, a teacher was hard on me, a coach is hard on me, we our first instinct is to brush it off like, no, they're not. You're just having a hard time. And sometimes our kids are right, and we may not be affected by the coach's words or the teacher's words, but they are with their sensitivity. And why that's a good first, and that's just the first step, that's not answering all your question, but your daughter needs to know that you hear her, and that you can then, after you hear her, have a conversation about dealing with the way he talks to the team, because there are some coaches that are just a little more harsh, and it doesn't mean they're bad people, it's just their personality is a little more harsh. But first things first is, is he really yelling at her? That's just the first thing. And then
explain that there's different ways of communicating. It's one thing to be disparaging. It's another thing, literally, like you're in a pool. You gotta, I don't know if you know about pools, but there's echoes and it's loud. He could just be saying things so she could hear it. So I think I would maybe want to differentiate it. So Jen, I actually just chatted with her. Jen, I'm going to unmute you. Let's see, unmute. Jen, are you there?
I am here.
Yeah.
Hi, Jen. I'll turn you up a little bit.
You have to turn our volume up.
Okay, go ahead.
What am I supposed to be saying?
Oh, I'm sorry, honey.
What is your take? Is she,
as far as the coach?
Yeah. Do you see him yell at her?
Well, see, I think my daughter perceives it as yelling, but like Todd was saying, you're in a pool and you just have to speak loudly. And it's the same coach that she had during the summer, but the coach has stepped it up a notch. So she is a little more critical, and there's fewer swimmers. She has the opportunity to see what kids are doing incorrectly. And I know that my daughter takes it to heart as I would. So, I get it, but I don't know how to encourage her to be like, it's okay, stick with it. She's already like, I hate it one day. And then one day she likes it. So I just don't know how to help her.
Does she hate it because of the coach, or is there other stuff going on?
She hates it also because she just doesn't get it immediately. I mean, it's a tough sport, and there's so many I've learned little intricacies to each stroke, and she sees kids do better than her and just compares herself. It's just hard, I think.
So are you worried that she's going to quit before she really gives it a chance?
Yes.
Okay. Jen, I'm going to mute you because there's just a few things from what you said. Number one thing that might be helpful, and it takes kind of a stretch for you, is to have a time where your daughter and you and the coach have 5 minutes together. This is not like a big deal. You're not going to tell the coach they're doing anything wrong, but to explain, have the coach explain, the reason that my voice is loud in the pool is because I have to reach everybody, because we're under a timeline, because this is my style of coaching, and it is in no way disparaging of you. And you're not telling the coach to change the way they're doing it. I mean, as long as they're being respectful, and that's not necessary, but you're bringing your daughter on board for her understanding what's happening, and the coach gets an opportunity to talk to her one-on-one. And again, it only has to be 5 minutes. And then, again, that's a stretch for you as a parent, because I know that that's like an advocating kind of thing. And a lot of times parents are like, I don't even want to get involved in that way. But sometimes that can create a change right there, because your daughter will then see the coach in a different way. The other thing is the feelings that she's having of being overwhelmed in the competition and thinking everyone's better than her. So normal. Like, that feeling that she's having, every kid has, either in their sport or in school or in something. And the reason that that's important to understand is when she tells you she's feeling that way, you don't have to talk her out of it. You can just acknowledge it and validate it and give her times when you felt similarly, because you can't make her stop feeling that way, but you can help her decrease the tension around feeling that way. You can help her. Todd and I were just on the show before talking about anxiety, about decreasing that balloon. That her balloon right now is really tight, and she's full of anxiety around swimming because the coach yells, because there's competition, because she doesn't feel worthy. And what you're saying to her by saying, yeah, those feelings you're having, I've had them too. Let me tell you when. Or, you know, your older sister or your brother or your cousin or your friend. Kids have those feelings. This is normal. There are kids that are better than you, and there will always be. There are kids that don't know as much as you, and there will always be. And some things you'll excel at, some days, some practices you'll excel at, and some you won't. What you're doing is you're giving her room to breathe in swimming. Because if she thinks swimming is about winning every time and being the best and being the highly competitive person, then she can't achieve that. So then what's the solution? I quit. But if you give her room in swimming to not be the best, maybe someday she is, but to have some, maybe a different kind of relationship with the coach and some normalcy and some room to breathe, she might feel less overwhelmed.
Well, and I would say the coach, explain that the coach is there and the competition is there to get her to be better at swimming. So maybe you want to have a discussion on intention. Like, the coach is there, he may be yelling or using a louder voice, but his intention is to help you improve.
I think
on
it's
your
a her.
Oh, her.
I think it's a her.
Help her improve on her swimming or even competition. I don't know if it goes in swimming, but whenever I want to get better at a sport, I always have to play against people that are better than me, whether it's basketball or pickleball or golf or anything.
Like when I play in pickleball?
No,
you are
worse than me,
I think,
sweetheart.
I'm really good.
No, she's not, but she tries her best. Good job, sweetie.
Oh,
good job.
I'm better at some things.
You're better at Zen parenting answers and questions and stuff.
And I'm better at we'll go.
Yeah,
we'll
you
go
can't think
list.
Of anything.
I can too.
No, you can't.
There's things I'm better.
No, the way I learn is by getting my butt kicked on the court or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if that helps, but those are my thoughts.
Well, and that is not, he's an adult. He's a 45-year-old man who understands that. Our kids don't get that. Our kids don't understand that it's okay to not be the best all the time, nor should they, because they have to have the feeling she's having. That's why I keep saying they're normal, is you have to have that feeling of recognizing people are better than you to then know how to cope with it. You know, like, we don't get to go through life and not have times when we're like, oh, wait, I thought I was good and I'm not as good as I thought. Or I thought I was working hard and there's actually another level of working hard. That's that's what it, but what we can do as parents is we can't keep that from happening. We can't be like, no, stop feeling that way. No, you're better than everybody. We don't do that. What we do is say, yeah, this is hard. You know, there are people who they do this day and night and they breathe this, you know, no, there's only one Michael Phelps. You know what I mean?
And there'll never be another one like him
again. And there, but there will be other amazing swimmers, and no one should be Michael Phelps. And we can say that in every swimming pool across the country. It's not just Olympians, but there's always going to be...
always somebody, in the words of Mr. Miyagi, always somebody better.
And that doesn't mean your daughter doesn't belong there. Just because there's people who are better doesn't mean you don't belong there. We need a whole range of swimmers in that swimming pool. And you belong there if you love it. If she's like, I don't feel like I belong there anymore because it's not anything except I don't like swimming anymore, that's a totally different thing. But if she loves swimming, she belongs there.
I'm going to unmute you just to see if you had any follow-up thoughts or comments. So, Jen, are you there?
I am here.
Any thoughts?
No, it was all very helpful. And I have talked to the coach, and she is very open, thankfully. So I think she would be open to having a discussion with my daughter and me, or just with my daughter. So, but I like Kathy's idea of belonging, because I think she does feel like she belongs there. So,
yeah.
And like you said, that's what I try to tell both my kids. There's always going to be somebody better, and there's always going to be somebody not as good. So that's just the way it is, you know? So it was helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. And sometimes there's different reasons because, like, sorry, Toddy, I talked over you. But our daughter Cameron is doing cross country, and she is not like a runner. But it's not something that she's like, oh, I love running, I love cross country. You want to know why she does cross country? Her friends are in it. She wants to see them. She is usually in the last, when they finish a meet, she's in the last leg of the people coming in. But she's not there to win. She's there because she knows running's good for her, and she'll come home and say, oh, that exercise. Oh, I got some exercise today. And she does it because Kira and Ann are doing it, and she likes being with them after school. So sometimes we can find, and then there's other things that Cameron excels at. So the fact that she excels here allows her to not have to be number one in cross country. Her older sister was great in cross country, and they never talk about that, which is good. There's not, maybe because they never ran together.
Yeah, different times.
But, you know, her older, JC is a runner by just birth. She was running.
I was running.
But that, Cameron's like, no, I'm going to do cross country, but for different reasons. So I only say that because.
I can run like wind blows, Miss Blue.
That's right.
So Jen Rogers, just make sure you keep us updated on how things are going with swimming. And now I'm going to head over to our friend Jennifer, and I'm going to unmute her because she has her hand raised. What do you got, Jennifer?
I just wanted to say something to Jen from just the longer term perspective. When my son was 10, he was playing football, and he wound up quitting. And there were a lot of people who were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he quit. What's wrong with him? He's so athletic. He should be doing this, blah, blah, blah. But he was in an environment that he wasn't ready for. Like, there was a lot of yelling by the coaches, and there was a lot of pressure, and it was a really big commitment. And he, at that point in his life, he wasn't ready. And my husband and I said, you know what? You don't have to be ready right now. If it's not working for you, that's okay. And he would say, but I love football, and I don't want to be a quitter. And I'm like, you're not being a quitter. You're just not ready for this right now. So fast forward 5 years, he's now 15, and he's gone into high school, and he's playing on the freshman football team. So this is the first time he's gone back to football. But now he's ready. You know, he's older. He's more mature. He knows how to handle commitments. He knows kind of, you know, what to internalize and what not to internalize. So sometimes it's even just a maturity issue. And it doesn't mean, I think, the thing for us, for our son, was we just wanted him to know that just because you decide something now doesn't mean it's over forever. Like, it's okay if it's not working now. You might be able to return to it later. So just in case it ever came to that for Jen and her child, that, you know, it wasn't working now doesn't mean it's the end of everything. Because my son did it, and he's no worse for it. There's, you know, people say, oh my God, if you missed out on all that, you know, no one's going to let you play. It's not true. When they're ready, they'll be able and it'll be okay. So I just wanted to offer that.
I love that. And that is a huge other side of the coin, or however you want to say it. Like, that's so good, Jennifer, that is so good, because it, a lot of times we think we have to make this work. And how do we make this work? And sometimes it's not supposed to, and it doesn't mean swimming doesn't work. It means today it doesn't work. And that is, and it could be whatever's going on in their lives, their growth, their mentality, their maturity, their emotional state. But I love that. There are so many things that I have stopped doing and gone back to, even as an adult. So,
well, and my example is our oldest daughter played soccer. She was a pretty good soccer player, and then she didn't like it anymore. So she quit team sports for a few years. Yeah. And I was kind of like patiently waiting, because I know that she's athletic. I know she's got these gifts that God gave to her. And I just wanted her to jump back into the sports things. Thankfully, I had a wife who basically reeled me in and not pushing the envelope and allowing her to figure it out. And then, as I've said, shared on the podcast a few years later, she says, what's this game with lacrosse, like with the stick and the ball and all that? And she spent 2 or 3 years where she did cross country but did no team sports. And I was kind of like patiently or impatiently waiting for her to kind of step into something else. And she came to us with lacrosse.
Mm-hmm. She found it.
Now she loves it. Now she may quit tomorrow or she may play in college. Who knows? But we let her pick that on her terms. And we'll let her quit on her terms within reason. Yeah. The whole quitting is a tricky
thing. And that's the thing, that word quitting, sometimes things end. Sometimes things aren't right today. Sometimes things need to be put on hold. Sometimes you need to find another place to play something or do something. You know, like my younger, when my daughters were younger, and you know, Skylar especially, she dances and sings. And sometimes Todd and I'll be like, if you want to take a dance class, and she's like, no, I just want to dance here. You know, sometimes kids just want to play it in the backyard or swim in their pool across the street, and not everything needs to be
formalized. But she has all this talent, and she has to get the right instructor today, sweetheart.
You know what? Misty Copeland started dancing when she was 13. And look where Misty Copeland is now.
Who's Misty Copeland?
Misty Copeland is the, like, the premier ballerina, the best ballerina. And again, our kids may be older than 13, but Kristen Wiig started doing comedy when she was 22. You know? There is no time limit. This is crap that our communities put on us, and they say, if you don't start now, they'll never do it.
Colonel Sanders started Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was 65 years old.
That's right. Guys could have a chicken franchise.
Yes.
In your third chapter of life.
Finger licking good.
Finger licking good. It's so gross, though.
No, it's not.
It is.
Kentucky Fried Chicken is yummy, even though I haven't eaten meat in 4 months.
I like the mashed potatoes.
Of course you do.
They're good.
Who's the lady?
Biscuits.
Who's the affirmation lady? Louise
Hay.
Oh,
yeah. Louise Hay started her business at 80. For those of you who know Hay House, Louise Hay, she's written, you know, You Can Heal Your Life, all those books. 80 is when she started the business. Like, she had written the books before then, but she's like, I'm going to start a business at 80. The point is that this timeline in our brain is all made up. And now you may say, but I have all of this, when you're getting reinforcement, I have all this proof that it's true, because look, this kid liked baseball and then they couldn't find a team, or this, it may not end up looking the way you think it's supposed to, but they may find it in another way. They may not make, you know, they maybe you may have a kid who loves singing and drama and they try out for plays and it doesn't work, or the fact that they didn't take the class, they didn't get in, but maybe there's something in singing, they end up doing a cappella somewhere. You know, like, you can't control it. Like, let go. I'm talking to myself, too.
Yeah, and get it together,
get
man.
Get it together. Liz has a question.
Oh, Liz has a question. I'm going to unmute Liz.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not more of a question, but it's more of just this really, you know, interesting thing that happened to my daughter, too. And she was, I thought she'd be an athlete. She ended up going to band forever. And now she found rowing, and it's been really great for her, but it's a really intense sport. But the interesting thing was, is that we've always had this open kind of communication about it, about, hey, you know, this is just, you're doing this for you, you know, and everyone's asking her, is she going to playing college, she can row in college and all this kind of stuff. And I just keep telling her, this is for you. You got to do with it what you want to do with it. And she goes, so if I don't want to do it anymore, I don't have to. I said, of course you don't have to. Like, this is for you, you know? But the funny thing was, she was with all of her fellow rowers and the coach said, so for some reason he asked, could someone, if anyone didn't want to row anymore, would their parents not, you know, would their parents be okay with that? She was the only kid in that room that raised her hands. And I was thinking, and she came home and told me that. And she said, Mom, I don't understand it. I said, neither do I. And maybe they just don't have those conversations. But I was floored. Not one other kid out of about 60 rowers. She was the only one that raised her hand. I don't know. I just think it's a really good and important, you know, conversation to have with your kids. Like, this is for you, you know? I don't know.
So I'm going to mute you. I have two things. One is, I hope, like you said, I don't know if she said 60 rowers or 16, but it doesn't matter. I hope that maybe half, you know, there's the parents that are like really, you know who those parents are. They're like, no, my son or daughter is going to do this or this or this. I'm hoping maybe half of them are like the crazy ones, for lack of a better term. The other half, to Liz's point, maybe they just haven't had that conversation yet.
Or they haven't thought it through. This is the self-awareness thing, is that a lot of times I talk to my parents, we'll just use rowing because Liz brought it up. Doesn't Liz look like Noreen?
Yes, she does.
You look like our friend Noreen.
And we love Noreen.
We love Noreen.
And we love Liz.
Maybe. I know. So I hope, Liz, if you're at the conference, you get to meet Noreen, because she'll be there.
Noreen is a beautiful woman, by the way.
Oh, yes, she is. And she's so funny.
Yes.
She makes me laugh more than most people. Anybody. Yeah, Todd loves it when I'm with Noreen, because I'm – okay. So anyway, what was I saying?
You're telling me how awesome I am?
No, I was saying that that a lot of times parents haven't thought it through. So I'll be talking with a parent about, like, say, rowing, like I was saying before, and they'll be like, well, I don't want my kid to quit. And I'll be like, well, what if they didn't want to do it? And they'll sit there and they'll be like, oh, I guess it would be okay. But because they've never taken the time to even think about it, they're using in the present time a lot of kind of shame, guilt, fear, or passive aggressiveness around it, where the kid is picking up on the fact that if I quit, it might be a big issue. But if the parent really were to stop and think about it, they'd be like, oh, it really would be okay. But the kid is reading the vibe of just keep things going as they are. You know, like, I think a lot of times parents, like, whenever one of my girls decides they're done with something, my first response is often like, I'm okay with it, but I'm like, okay, so our whole rhythm is going to change. You know, when my girls are like, I'm done with this, I have to be like, okay, now the whole rhythm of the family is going to change, or now you're going to have this time open, or what, you know, it just shifts everything. And so our first impulse is sometimes like, why are you going to quit? Because it affects me, you know?
And it defies my expectations, because I had a plan that you're going to go to college and get a scholarship. So you're screwing my plans up.
That's the extreme that Todd was talking about. The parents who have already decided what this kid is going to do and that they're going to get a scholarship and row, and they're going to do that because that makes the parent feel good. Because see, what Liz is saying is she's disconnected in the good way, in the non-attachment Buddhism way, of what her daughter does makes her happy that her daughter's doing it, but she's not attached to it. Liz isn't attached to rowing. And then her daughter is free to enjoy it and will actually probably enjoy it more, Liz, because she knows it's just for her. Because when our kids feel like, you know, if it be swimming or cross country or anything, when they feel like they're not only playing for themselves and the coach and their team, but also their parents, holy crap, that's a lot of pressure. And no wonder that oftentimes they would rather quit. As John O'Sullivan taught us, you know, he was one of our speakers at our first conference. He's, you know, he works with families around sports and how crazy parents have gotten about it. And kids typically quit a sport by 13 because they're done with the pressure.
Like 75 or 80% of kids will quit team sports by the time they're 12 or 13.
Yeah. And it's because it's too much. The parent pressure, the coach pressure, that competition in the schools, they're done with it. So
I'm going to go to Rebecca Moore, who wrote us a question, because I don't know if we've answered one of Rebecca's questions. So I'm going to give her some preferential treatment. She says, I would love to hear your thoughts on communicating with grandparents who aren't respectful of their children's parenting styles. To be more specific, my mother recently moved closer to us and now spends more time with my kids. However, no matter how many times I've asked her to limit sugar and screen time, I feel the minute she's alone with them, she is showering them with treats, and they spend the bulk of them, bulk of their time on screens. They're 8 and 11. Literally, in the few hours She had them last weekend. They had dessert crepes, Ben and Jerry's ice cream, soda, and candy. All I say is, I want to go hang out with this grandma.
I know, and I hate to laugh because it's not funny, but it's kind of funny.
I know this won't kill them, but what bothers me to my core is that she refuses to really hear me when I ask her not to do this. When I talk about how I'm trying to help them develop good eating habits, too much sugar gives my older daughter digestive issues. She nods and agrees and couldn't be more agreeable. But then it's the same story when they are alone with her. My gut feeling is that she wants them to want to be with her.
Yeah.
And it is a way of buying their love, which is unnecessary. They love her with or without sweets, but frankly, they've come to associate her with sugar. Thanks. Wow, that's a good question.
Well, and it's so common. I mean, like, you know, hasn't everybody experienced that?
Yeah, like my mom, she died almost 3 years ago. She used to, like, we like, mom, put them to bed at the right time and give them good food. And sometimes she would, but sometimes she wouldn't.
We got home at midnight and they were all up.
Yeah.
And they were like 4, 3, and 1.
But this is about balance. Because first of all, our parents are not going to do everything we tell them to do when they're babysitting. Mm-hmm. But if they're defiant to everything, that's out of balance too.
And here's the thing. One of the comments she makes in there is, when I talk about how I'm trying to help them, I know this won't kill them, but what bothers me to my core is that she refuses to really hear me.
I feel like this is about mom and grandma.
Yes.
Nothing to do with grandkids.
And again, it does because it's bringing that thing up to the surface, but Rebecca says in it, what bothers me is that I'm asking her not to do something and she's not listening to me. So the sugar is kind of the trigger of all of this. And she's right to talk to her mom about the sugar. It's not that it's a non-issue. But what is being missed in the conversation is mom is missing that her daughter is feeling unheard around her own parenting. And sometimes we need to go to the core of that issue. And instead of keep talking about sugar, which is out here, Rebecca, and I know this can be challenging, but to say to your mom, like, and maybe if you guys have humor always helps, like to kind of grab your mom's hands and be like, mom, I feel like you don't listen to me, and it makes me feel like I'm unimportant, and what I say is, why are you trying to take your hand back?
Because I need to use the mouse, because I need to...
What I say is unimportant to you, and that's hard for me, because that's cutting to the core of the issue, because if you keep trying to do it around the sugar, there's going to be this back and forth, the unspoken, you know, there's always an unspoken.
She's got to have a date with her mom.
And it doesn't need to be a big deal. It doesn't need to be like, I'm going to have this deep talk with my mom. It's mom.
But if you try to do it when the grandkids are around, forget it.
Right.
Because they're putting on their mat. They're getting into that role. Mom's going to get mom role. Grandma's going to get grandma role. I feel like it needs to be happen outside of the grandkids.
It does. And it needs to be some room on both sides, because I know from my own mom and from Todd's mom that it is fun when you are the grandmother or the grandfather or the aunt, my aunt's there too. Hi, Peggy. To give these kids things that are treats and to love them, not just from your heart, but with these things that they love, that is enjoyable. And especially if you've raised kids and you had to do it so seriously, it's fun as a grandparent to do that. And we need to create some room for that. At the same time, grandma can talk with her daughter about not overdoing it. It doesn't have to be so extreme. It doesn't have to be the kids get no sugar with grandma, but it also doesn't have to be they get all the sugar with grandma. It's a honoring of both people's roles in this child's life. And I know that we don't have to love through sugar, but sometimes that's something. There's treats involved, and it's finding that balance.
So Millie said something in the chat window. One thought I had was maybe suggesting that grandma give them experience
treats, like
going to the park or trip to a zoo or something that she's able to handle with them solo. Doesn't have to be an expensive experience, but it'll be a treat to go with grandma. Would that be a possibility for Rebecca's family? I don't think Rebecca's on this call, but I think that's sound advice from Millie.
It is. Thank you, Millie. That's really good. And it's, I like the way you even wrote it, because it's about asking her mom. See, again, we got to get back to if Rebecca goes to her mom and says, mom, I know you want to give the kids treats. Here's how I'm going to have you do it. Mm. Then do you see how it's that control thing again of mom, listen to me, do it the way I would do it. Honor my parenting, honor me. really what Rebecca, you know, and again, Rebecca, you're not here, so I can't have a back and forth, but it's like an honor me. Honor what I'm saying.
I'm worried that if grandma takes him to the zoo, there's a lot of ice cream over there.
There is. And there's a lot of those things where you can get those plastic things.
Oh, I love those things.
You put the quarter in and
no,
get
it's
those
not plastic,
burned
it's
plastic
wax.
Things. Wax.
It's wax.
It I goes, like smell
and
that.
And it goes like this.
Yeah.
And then it makes it and then it goes.
Like a dolphin.
And then it drops down.
Yeah. One summer we have a zoo right by us called Brookfield Zoo. It's a big zoo in Chicago. And one summer I had a pass where I could go with the girls all the time. And the girls would want those every time. And JC had like 10 of them in
yeah.
a row.
JC's
and,
a collector.
And her room smelled like that plastic, but I kind of liked it.
Mm-hmm. But and those, it came out warm.
Yes, it came out warm. So back to the issue with Rebecca, just if you can get, okay, this is the best way to say it. Give your mom what you are asking from her, which is understand her and why she's doing what she's doing. So then there's space for her to understand you and understand why you're doing what you're doing. But if you go to her and say, no, now I'm the parent, I'm in charge, do as I say, it might work,
it might
but
not,
it might not. I just envision this.
It may elevate.
It may. And her mom doesn't sound mean or anything, but her mom may then sneak it more. You know, like, just
that
go to
a,
the core.
That is a cat and mouse game.
Cat and mouse, yes. Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry. Love yes. Jerry.
Did you? I did not.
How can you not love Jerry? What's your problem?
I think I liked Tom.
What?
I think I felt bad for
Tom.
Tom
was always the one chasing this poor little mouse.
And Jerry always won. Tom
yes,
never.
Jerry's smarter. Tom was very antagonistic. That's all I got to say.
I always envisioned him. He'd always grab him like this.
Yes.
Around the neck.
And what about Spike the dog?
Oh, yeah. He got involved. And he would always be mean to Tom. And he would always.
That's my boy.
And he could talk. Why could Spike talk and Tom and Jerry could not? Let's discuss.
Discuss.
These are things we need to know.
Discuss amongst
okay,
yourselves.
Okay, do we have time for one more or no?
We have time for one more. I'm going to unmute Millie because
okay.
Millie has some.
Millie.
Go ahead, Millie.
Okay, first of all, I just have to say, unrelated, how do you guys keep all that pop culture in your heads? Because I do not remember Spike the Dog. Oh my God, you guys just floor me with the memories that you guys have with pop culture. All right, so just very quickly, I'm sure everybody has had this challenge of your kids coming with you shopping or whatever. It could be any experience and they just want things. Let's see what I say in my question here that my 5-year-olds, okay, they don't quite understand. They said, well, why can't we get toys every time we go into the store? And they will literally they'll see anything. It may not even be something that they have to have, right? But it's because it's in front of them. Want it. And so I've tried to say yes more than no, but yes in that I say, oh, well, let's add that to your list. You know, let's add that to your list so that the next thing, you know, Christmas, birthday, whatever, we'll have it on our list and we'll consider that. Clearly not, you know, they're going to get like one thing out of that big, huge list, but still I'm not saying no to them. I'm saying, let's add it to your list. But it could, now it's gotten to the point where we walk by a drugstore, Walgreens even, they'll say, why can't we go in there and get a toy? Like, and of course, the conversation about how, you know, daddy makes money so that we can have food and this house to live in and clothes for you to wear, that just boom, you know, over their heads, especially with the 5-year-olds. And the 10-year-old may understand more, but I get it. They're kids. They want things. So I'm just wondering. Oh, and I said also that I think we've not done as good of a job kind of explaining to them really how this whole money transaction thing works. They understand on a cursory kind of level, but they don't really get it. And so I'm wondering if you guys have any tools and maybe FamZoo, I don't know if that's maybe one way to do it or how to explain to a kid that, yeah, I know, man, I want so many things too, but you know, I can't get everything that I want, you know? So that essentially is my question.
Sorry, I'm not mute yet. FamZoo is, go ahead. Oh, I unmuted. Oh, I muted her and unmuted. Sorry about that.
Okay.
FamZoo, it's too early to even think about FamZoo for your 5-year-old, so forget about that. Your 10-year-old, maybe, but the FamZoo is more of a transactional thing. It's more about teaching about money lessons, but I feel like this isn't about that. This is about kids wanting what they want immediately. So So the only notes that I wrote down when you're asking that question, Millie, is something that you used to do walking into the grocery store, is getting an upfront agreement of what the expectations were, what they were going to get or not get before you even enter the store. That way they kind of know it. Now, they're not going to get it the first time you do this upfront agreement, but it's going to take practice. It's going to be a muscle that you have to flex. But say, listen, we're going in for strawberries, apples, and grapes, and that's it. And we're not going to get anything else. This is not one of those shopping trips where you get it. And then, you know, every now and again, throw them a bone, say, okay, I'll let you get a
piece of gum,
piece of candy, whatever. But get it before you walk into the store. And I don't know, it worked for us.
Well, and there's another thing, Millie, with this is that, again, it's such a common thing with kids, because let's get down to the core of what's happening in their brain. When you buy something, you get a dopamine rush and it feels really good. And that's not just for kids, that's for us. There is a feeling that we get that is similar to getting a compliment or similar to winning something or similar. It feels good. So the reason they want to buy something is not because necessarily they're materialistic and they need it, but they want the rush. They want the hit. So they're like, why can't we buy this? And really what they're saying is, why can't you give me this feeling? Okay. So go to that with them. Explain, instead of explaining the money, which to Todd's point, or to your point, you know, they'll get, it's not that you can't add that in.
Yeah, you can plant that seed. You can plant that seed,
but it won't, that can be more of like you're setting a structure of them understanding money as they get older. But go to the core of the feeling and say something like, you know, when you go in and buy something, sometimes it feels really good, doesn't it? And then say, but after a while, it's like, you even forget you bought it. And it just like that feeling goes away. And then you need to get it again. And you need to get it again. And you need to get it again. So you're real. And then they might even say, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And I always tell my girls the story of my first car that I ever bought, and how my dad helped me buy this car. And I was so excited. And it was my very first car. And I was, oh my God, I couldn't have been more excited. Like I was beside myself. I couldn't sleep the night before. And I remember I got the car and we bought it, and or I bought it, and you know, my dad helped me, and then I drove it home, and the next morning I didn't feel excited anymore. Not even close.
Really?
I was like, I mean, it still smelled good and it was a new car and the radio worked and it didn't, but I was like, wait, where'd that feeling go? And it was like kind of the first time, and I was like 22, that I had realized that it's just a rush to buy something and that it really doesn't sustain, and that you then can talk to them about the things that actually do sustain, like the conversation we have together and relationships and being outside or whatever they love to do. Like you kind of have to come up with something they love. Like, you know, what sustains is when you're reading Harry Potter and you feel good for that whole book and then you can read another book and that can sustain. But buying things all the time, it's just a hit. It's a, you know, Millie, in a roundabout way, it's teaching them about addiction. Well, but without having to talk about addiction. Because that buying things is just another form of numbing and getting a good feeling. And our kids aren't wrong for wanting it. We just have to help them understand what they're doing and why buying something won't help.
Well, and I would say, and you know this, Millie, but I'll just kind of remind you, it's not what you say.
It's how you say
it. I love saying no to my kids. I know that comes out sounding bad, but like, I'm like, you guys have no idea how little I care the fact that I'm not giving you what you want right now.
It does. Likes to say
I that. Like
disappointing. What about what
kids?
Rob Bell said? Are you not listening
say
to
yes
Rob Bell?
As many times to make the no's more important. I know that, but sometimes we go along Todd's rules.
Yeah, but he uses humor.
Todd's rules.
He's never mad. He's just like, nope, I'm saying no.
It's not what you say, it's how you say it. They're five, so they're little. They're not tall. They're short people. So get down their level, say, I totally hear that you want this candy bar. We're not gonna do it today. Say it with love, compassion. Instead of annoyance, which you are, at least I would be, like, no, we're not getting another stupid candy bar because you still have chocolate in your teeth from yesterday's candy
bar. Yeah, you just finished that.
Right. So it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So you got to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
That's right. And basically that means that you kind of get down to their level and say, sometimes even when the girls are picking, JC lately has wanted to buy all sorts of like Arnold Palmer, like,
Iced tea
in Arizona. And she's like, I want to get this. And I'm like, you know what? I want to get that sometimes too. I totally understand why you want it, but let's instead just use the iced tea that's in the fridge. Or I understand why you want that candy bar, but we have a bag of peppermint patties at home. I know you want it. So it's kind of like we go to
Look at that guy.
Hi.
I need to meet this person.
Who is that? Say hi.
Hi, sweetie.
She finds this very entertaining.
I'm glad. Sweetie, you know who you are, and you don't have to be anybody but you who you are, okay? You are exactly who you're supposed to be.
Can I have this person's name?
This is Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
So if you're listening and not watching, Julia has, I assume, her beautiful daughter, Elizabeth, who's about 18 months old.
How old is she?
She's a year and a half.
Nice. Hot. Nice.
That's what I'm talking about.
Hi, baby.
So I couldn't pass that up.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I saw a beautiful Elizabeth. So anyway.
Glad you joined us. So, so Millie, just finishing up, all you have to do is, it's the same universal principles that I know we say ad nauseum. Validate, normalize, listen to what they have to say, and say, I totally get it and I understand, but we're not going to do this today. And because you know what, tomorrow we'll want more, because that's the way our brains work. Make it like a neurological lesson for them. So they're understanding their brain and say, sometimes I want to go out and buy stuff too. And I realize that that's not going to help me feel better, that there's other things that are going to help me feel better. So again, these are like not one conversation, but over and over and over again.
So we're 52 minutes in. We can maybe have one more quick one, or we can close it down. Anybody have anything urgent? They're like, oh my God, I'm going crazy, I need help. Because if you do, we're here for you. If you don't, we will say bon voyage.
And well, I have, if nobody does, there's one more quick question over here. And it's like, I can do it really easy.
Julia wants to see that book one more time. All right. It's Relationship but Breakthrough by Chloe Madonis. Introduction by Tony Robbins. Chloe, she's awesome.
And then the Four Love Language, or Four Love, that's Four Agreements. The Love Languages book by Gary Chapman. So the last question, Karen had a question about tips for parenting with patience. I find myself getting increasingly less patient with my kids 2, 4, 6, and 8. It is a daily practice. You will never wake up one day and be a patient person. It's a daily experience of choosing to put energy toward becoming more patient, not for the future, but for that day. Every morning, I want to wake up and not go meditate. Have I shared that with you guys before? I don't want to. When my clients come in and say, but you love it, you love meditation, I'm like, "Who? What are you smoking? Like, no, I don't. I'm not like, I don't get up and say, you know, I mean, there are times I love it after I'm done. And sometimes I am motivated, but your ego says, no, you don't need it. Your ego says, go back down, go downstairs, go take your shower. Your ego doesn't think you need it. But I know if I go breathe for 9 to 11 minutes and have a mantra and hold my rock that I have, I am more patient that day. And sometimes you have to demonstrate that to yourself by practicing those things, and then you don't for a few days and you see the difference. So patience is not something that someone will give you, and it is not something that you are lacking. It is always available to you, but we have to practice using it. Remember how I started the show? I love it when things come full circle. When I was saying hope is always available and peace is always available, no matter where you are, no matter where you are. There, what is her name? Immaculate?
Yes.
Immaculate?
Yes.
This woman named Immaculate, I can't say her last name.
Abizumir.
Yeah, we can't say it. She was in the Rwanda genocide. She was in Rwanda. She was in a bathroom with 24 other people hiding from people who were trying to murder her. And guess what she found in that bathroom? Peace. She figured out a way in her own mind to have peace. And she survived. And now she helps other people. And she works with forgiveness and peace. So for those of us who are like, yeah, I can't find peace because my house is messy. Immaculate, Rwanda genocide. And that doesn't mean it should be easy for us. It means that we have to practice. These people like Immaculate and Viktor Frankl and Elie Wiesel, not only are they amazing writers and inspirational, they remind me that I have a greater capacity to handle things than I thought.
The name of the book is called Left to Tell. It's actually one of the few books I've read.
Yeah.
We met her. We didn't meet her. We saw her speak at a Wayne Dyer thing years ago. She's truly an inspiration. I love Kathy's idea of like, surrounding yourself with people whose stories, like, you think you got it bad, listen to this woman's story.
And it's not just about hearing how bad they have it. It's about hearing that they had it bad and they found peace. Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, Martin Luther King. These are people who expanded our capacity. They are the people who taught, like the people, the person who was told they couldn't run a 4-minute mile, and then they did.
And then it took like 2 months for the next person to do it because
we all expanded.
We expanded. But the counterpoint to that is she's got 4 kids, 2, 4, 6, and 8. So it's not an easy time.
No, in no way am I trying to make it simplified.
And bless yourself when you don't have patience.
Yes.
Don't beat yourself up.
Yes.
Because you've got 4 kids.
And
that
you're
are two,
busy.
4, 6, and 8. Forget about it.
And you're overwhelmed. And when you don't have patience, say, I don't have patience. Last night, I was so grumpy. I go, everybody leave me alone. I don't want to be by anybody. I was like, don't do that. Don't do that. I'm grumpy. But I take full ownership of my grumpiness. I am grumpy and I am tired. And there were, you know, too much. And then the next day is a new day. So when you're not patient, be as humor-filled and as responsible for it as you can be, and then let it go and start again. So this is not perfect. So Karen, yeah, give your, you know, love. We'll send you the good, get send her the goods, the good loves. It's all right. We can be self-compassionate. And then the more self-compassionate we are, the more compassionate we are at other people. So
it's 12:57.
Okay.
You crazy kids, keep trucking. And next week, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we got it. We have a good show tomorrow about anxiety.
Yeah.
So listen to that. That's not a Team Zen thing. That's just Zen Parenting Radio. But yeah. And then I think we have another, I don't know when the next Zen talk is, but I'll email you. And it's been taking my computer a while to upload these. So if you don't get this right away, don't worry. It's just taking a little bit of time.
Exercise some patience.
That's right. Practice.
Adios.
Bye.
Oh, yeah.